Hey, how are you?
Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable.
Like a drink?
Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Good morning, good afternoon, good day, good evening, and good night to everybody listening to the Tech Lounge. I'm here with the mighty fine Chris Ward, a.k.a. Christian Chiller. We will share with you some discussion, some commentary, some analysis, some deep diving opinions. This will be our opinions, our takes, some of the things that we may not get paid to talk about, which is always a great thing. So how are you doing, Chris?
It has been a long time, hasn't it? As well. It has been a little while. I had some other episodes in the meantime. I was actually trying to clear the backlog.
Always the job of a journalist, clearing the backlog.
Oh, hence the past few have been double interviews as well, because some of them are going back so long, it was getting embarrassing, really.
Yeah, I had the same problem with my interviews, actually.
Well, I'm not great because Berlin summer so far has been appalling.
It is dismal. It has not stopped raining since I got up this morning, I think.
For weeks. And it was like we had a couple of days of blistering heat and then just rain.
It's great for the balcony garden. The balcony garden is very happy.
Oh, I know.
But it is very
And the area around Berlin is actually very dry.
It is very difficult to plan.
You wait all year for summer. Yeah. And all these outdoor events, and it's just been
it's almost
horrible.
It's almost like you feel like you should make bets on is an event going to happen or not, because it's just the uncertainty. Yeah. And it must be really hard because you're relying on people taking a chance. And, you know, we know a lot of German culture is not about taking chances. It's about certainty. And so having, people are looking at the weather and thinking, is there a chance of rain? Do I commit to something? Maybe not. So, not great.
Yeah. Well, on the subject of Europe not being that great. Oh, dear. Terrible segue. Well, actually, a good segue, but terrible.
It's an apt segue, point of view. I would say.
It is, because today we wanted to talk specifically around, and actually often we bring a topic each. This is something we both wanted to talk about for different reasons. The kind of the state of European tech media, shall we say. Do you, Kate, like to set a little bit of context maybe of why we would be talking about this?
Yeah, I mean, we're basically in a scenario where the state of digital publishing and tech media has changed immeasurably over the last few years. And I think it's gone from having a fairly sizable number of players that's sort of been whittled down gradually. And if you include things like trade publications, which are often, despite what some people might think, but particularly beneficial to a lot of end users, and, you know, for journalists, they're quite well paying. We've seen a lot of those reduced. We've also seen teams that have reduced their headcount, particularly in Europe. And an example, I guess the most infamous example of that would be TechCrunch. Then, of course, there's been Business Insider that reduced their numbers by 20%. And was there another one? I'm trying to think.
Well, there are others.
There are others that we know about that we can't mention.
Let's
just put it that way.
Right now. But depending when this comes out, that may be.
That's true.
Yes.
And I was thinking about this because I have only worked for, in the time I've been a journalist, which is like 10 years and a bit over 10 years, every publication I have written for ever has either closed down or has pivoted to unpaid writers. Whether that's your pay-to-play people or it's your...
You sure you want to be saying this, Kate? You sure you want to be saying
this? But it's true.
Yes.
This is a big trend that is not just about Europe. It reflects a bigger trend across tech media. And it also reflects a changing shift for the users, I think, as well. And
let's come back to the future in a moment.
Yeah, sure.
I think we want to talk about the present, then how we got here, and then the future.
Fair.
And I think the obviously this is an industry that is having issues, but in Europe especially at the moment, why it's problematic is we have a lot of governments and bodies talking about wanting to increase the power, the reach, the innovation of European tech. So to have decreasing amounts of local media covering it is problematic. And it's also not a good reflection, maybe. There's one thing we should point out that I think is something that maybe is a bit of a glaring gap in our knowledge, is that we are largely talking about English language,
correct,
European tech media. And that includes, as you mentioned, TechCrunch, US with European offices. But we are fully aware that there are a lot of European tech outlets and journalist outlets writing in their own language that we know very little about. And so we can, maybe they're completely bucking this trend. Maybe we are being somewhat isolated in our perspective. And if you're listening to this and say, hey, Kate, hey, Chris, I work for Italian media, German media, French media, and it's going great, or this isn't happening, then please do let us know, because we can only work from our perspective. And whilst we speak between a modicum of German and French, it's not really something I keep an eye on. But we do meet them at events and know they are there. And maybe the market is not as being as decimated as the English.
Yeah, and I can certainly give some examples there as well. To maybe I should do that now to give a bit of hope.
We're
certainly not here to offer just the gloom and doom. In April, we saw the founding and the launch of Defender Media, which is a Ukrainian form reporting on the business of war, so defense tech, basically, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I interviewed one of the founders there. There's also been Newsrooms AI acquired the Austrian tech media platform Trending Topics in June.
Yeah.
So that's they're going strong. And then it's Recursive, which is another media who tripled their revenue, and they've also changed their leadership structure. That happened in June also. Mm. So, I mean, I would certainly not say that everything is shit, everything's gone to hell, because it's not, it's not true.
It's just changing. Let's come to the future in a minute. I think that we should go back a bit and see how maybe media got here and possibly why it's been exacerbated the past year or so. But before we do, we are media ourselves. And what does media need, Kate?
Advertising.
Yes. So today, now, maybe there's some journalists out there who would like to change their skill set. Manning is a wonderful book publisher, and also they have a lot of online courses that can teach you a wide variety of subjects. So if you're interested in getting 40% off of anything that they have available on their website, then head to go.christianschiller.com/Manning. So, Kate, how did we get here? How far back should we go? I mean, I think we can certainly talk about how, I think we were talking about this the other day, because we like to watch some TV shows and we have a bunch of streaming services, but we have generally opted for the cheapest plans. And we were talking the other day about how now every streaming service we have has advertising. And how did we get here? Weren't these services supposed to solve this problem? So, and now we're paying more than we ever paid because we're not in America and never had cable and getting advertising. So do you think advertising went too far?
I think one of the first things that was happening was the whole issue around, firstly, how people find news. So things like SEO, the impact of big tech companies like Google and Facebook and Yahoo and some of the others on how people, literally sort of the traffic that leads you to the websites with the news. That's something that started, I guess, in about 2022 when Facebook really started pivoting away. And Google changed their search algorithms, which seem to be constantly changing, replacing with this sort of goal long-term, I guess, to replace traditional search with AI summaries. So,
I'd like to come to that in a second, because I think AI is the next stage. Sure. I think we need to go slightly further back first, because advertising did and is sort of too much now. But it became the only way that you could pay for a lot of things. And people complain about paywalls, people complain about subscriptions. Advertising was, still is to a certain degree, an easy way of getting some money relatively passively But there's just so much now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, I mean, and this is, I guess this is what it comes down to when we talk about, you know, TV shows as one example or film, you can choose as a consumer, do I opt for the subscription model where I don't get any ads, or do I pay a different subscription and get, you know, get the ads? And I think that's been sort of the difference with tech journalism. There's been sort of more of a, you know, there's the both, I think people have, a lot of publications have tried both the opt-in and then the opt-out. And everyone has struggled because I think it maybe doesn't reflect the way people are used to accessing media, because a subscription sort of relies on the idea that you're going to just go to certain sites and get your information. When I don't think people access news channels this way anymore. I think people are looking for different things from different sites, perhaps. For example, if you read the New York Times versus the Guardian, you're looking for different things. Or if you're looking at TechCrunch or any of the sites, really. I mean, I think those things are kind of changing as well. So the idea about where does a reader, in our case, start has been very different.
Could we argue that the proliferation of the internet, like you mentioned a couple of outlets there, but most of them were old outlets? Sure. Could we say that maybe online media created too many outlets, and now even further diluted by the presence of influencers on TikTok and YouTube, etc., which is a whole other potential source of dilution? I mean, famously now Apple, I think, invites more influencers, whatever that even really means, but we kind of know what it means, than quote-unquote proper media to its events these days. So have we also just got too many platforms now in the traditional sense of the word? There's too many ways to hear opinions, and so we shouldn't just assume that the up until now traditional website in quote marks was going to last forever.
Yeah, I think it's also about the companies themselves, how they fund and invest in media as well, because you know, the last decade we've seen many publications, you know, bought and sold largely by private equity, which invariably means either, you know, you might buy a group of publications and then you're going to slaughter some, or you're going to reduce headcount in some of the teams, or you're going to completely reshape them into something else that becomes a, you know, an AI generated, I don't know, new syndicate or some such, like these kind of things. It's been, you know, and I will, when we talk a bit later, I will offer some, you know, some, emphasize some points of hope, because there are definitely some. There's definitely quite a few.
No, for sure.
As well. Yeah. So, yeah.
So I mean, I kind of worry that there was fatigue around advertising and subscriptions. Everyone talks about just the price of a coffee. I mean, we've done it ourselves on the show as well. And, I mean, I don't know about you, I don't drink 20 coffees a day. So, you know, the number of media outlets you want to follow. And it's strange, the whole value proposition is strange, in that Spotify, Apple Music, Netflix, etc., can be the same price as a media subscription, and they don't feel of equivalent value. It feels, I don't know about you, that TV kind of feels better value if it was $5 a month, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think the asynchronicity is also the change. I mean, when's the last time? I mean, we don't have a TV in the conventional sense. But I would ask most people listening, when's the last time
you can't even buy a TV anymore.
But that's what I mean.
When's
the last time you watched terrestrial? Is it called terrestrial? Is that what we call it? Terrestrial TV.
Yeah.
I haven't done it. Even when I lived back in Australia, I didn't do it then either. So it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that.
So in some respects, the model that we are now saying is kind of dying has been actually around a while. So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And nothing lasts forever. And then you sort of foreshadowed it, but we come to AI. Now, this, I think, has been the many things along the way have caused hiccups, but I think this has been one of the main issues, in that there was always this uncomfortable relationship between Google, especially, and media, in that you figured out ways to get good results and Google would funnel people to you. And that was kind of the relationship. Google took bits here and there, like snippets here and there and things like that, that various countries took umbrage with. But fundamentally, it funneled people to your site. And we could have complained and argued that maybe there was too much power in the hands of one search engine. But there we go. We didn't mind because it got people there.
Yeah.
And the difference now is, of course, most people really, apart from sort of current affairs and news, like news, you know, what's happening in that war or that election or something like that, you just kind of want an answer to something. Which company raised the most this week in Germany? What's the best toaster I should buy? And traditionally, we went through all these trawling of search results and SEO spam and right farm spam to find answers that we trusted and got to an answer. And if now something else comes along and can give us that answer in context without us having to go through all those links, frankly, why would you do it any other way? But of course, it means that all the outlets that feed that machine don't see the face, the eyes landing there anymore. And I think that's kind of the big problem that's happened in the past year or so.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess if you talk about an example of people using generative AI platforms like ChatGPT as a search engine, you've got that issue about, are people using that even to monetize? Like, would a link from that lead you to even buy a subscription or something like that of a website? Like, and I'm hearing a lot of noise, and I think a lot of people are talking about this right now, about how you optimize a media site for its presence in these search engines or these ChatGPT, GenAI kind of websites. And sort of a transition from the search engine optimization to more kind of, what do you call it, AI optimization?
GEO, they call it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the idea that while there's still sort of best practices, you know, clear, you know, original thought and, you know, compelling headlines and things like that and insights or facts, that sort of thing, data, blah, 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 making you kind of a primary source. But there's also these ideas, which I've also read about, things like should headlines be questions, which is where it comes into kind of that BuzzFeed light kind of approach to journalism, where you have more listicles, you have more Q&A type stuff.
Yeah. Well, this has been coming a long time.
Yeah, so it's, and I think when we talk about audiences for most journalists, I think a lot of us, we don't have a grasp of our audiences. In general, I think most publications probably don't have as much of a data-driven analysis of audiences perhaps they would like to, because I think often
Kate, before we go too far, can I just challenge you on something?
Yeah.
I mean, have you used ChatGPT for search at all? Like search? Because it has a search feature.
Occasionally.
Because, I mean, I haven't. I'm just interested because, so for example, when I want to actually use search to find sources, I tend to use Perplexity because Perplexity by default shows you references. I argue whether its references are always any good, but still. Now let's see, because this is the issue, and this is what I want to take issue with some of what you were saying about getting to say to your work. But let's just try ChatGPT out of interest. Okay. 50 biggest fundraisers in Europe in 2025. Dundraisers? What is a dundraise? Fundraisers. Okay. Let's see. Searching the web, it says, here are some of the largest fundraisers. Okay. So it does, this is a Perplexity style interface. Yeah. It does reference where it got it from. Yeah. Unfortunately, most of your competition. Sifted seems to be the way something got.
Well, I don't think we've ever done top 50. That's probably why.
Oh, right. Fine. But it's,
I think they're the only one that does that, actually.
But this is an interesting point. Yeah. But now, so I wanted to know the answer to that. I could see the source links.
Yeah.
Do I have any reason to click them? I don't know. And this is where I wonder, like, will these new search interfaces, these search AI interfaces, and in some respects I kind of wonder where the borders are. Mm. When does a ChatGPT like interface become a search engine and vice versa? the line is getting gray.
It's an interesting point. I mean,
I've
spoken to people younger than me and they say they use it, ChatGPT, primarily for search these days. They don't use Google or an alternative.
No. Google is as worried about it as media outlets are, to be fair. But they have other businesses to fall back on, including...
They've got other ways to make money.
But this is the thing I mean. It's like, so I use the search interface, I use Perplexity, I use traditional, quote-unquote, ChatGPT. Do I then come to your work? If I want to know what Kate Lawrence said about something, then I probably go and look for it. If I just want a general answer to something and something confidently gives me an answer... Whole other question of whether the answer is correct or not. Do I care about coming to see where it came from?
I think it depends what you want. I mean, are you wanting to get more information? You know, sometimes I think about it like, is it like you're doing a trivia question type thing where you just want to know a fact, but do you want to substantiate that fact? Then you might go to the website and check perhaps, and also check where they get their data, stuff like that. You know?
Can I give you a good example? Yeah. I'll give you a good example from yesterday. I was looking for a new repeater for the office for reasons I won't bore you.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I kind of know what a repeater is, but I'm looking for something very specific. I wanted a repeater with more than two Ethernet ports, whatever. And so I tried ChatGPT and it gave me some results that seemed reasonable and also explained to me that it's not common to have more than two, which is the problem I've been finding and why I went to ChatGPT in the first place. It gave me some models. I just copy-pasted those models into DuckDuckGo and then went and looked. Now, the problem is, traditionally, if I'd just done a search, I might have ended up on the Wirecutter or Tom's Hardware or something like this and gone down that path. But instead, I got some results on a search engine. I got some results in ChatGPT, put them into a search engine and just went straight to Amazon instead, or to the company website. And I kind of bypassed the traditional source of getting that information. Mm. So there's kind of an example for me, and this fundraise is another one. I've got a bunch of companies and the amounts of money they fundraised. If I trust ChatGPT, I don't need to do anything else. I don't need to go and look any further.
Ah,
and this is kind of where, I don't know. Well, this is a much wider conversation, of course, to a degree I do, with a grain of a huge truckload of salt. But I think this is my point, and we may be people who sit and analyze, but I don't think many users do because it's confidently convincing. But this is why I think a lot of newsrooms are really struggling, because systems are bypassing that pathway. And
you know what though? I would say that most journalism is not data-driven journalism like a funding announcement. Most journalism is its features, its interviews, its op-eds, its that sort of stuff. You know, most publications are doing that probably more so.
Okay.
I think perhaps, you know, people have said to me repeatedly that, you know, an issue for tech journalism is the fact that for startups, a big part of their news is funding. And the reason that is because they're always trying to get the next round of funding. So it's this, you know, it's flywheel effect. And they know that, you know, for example, publications like ours, the average is, I think, half our readers are VCs. And they're often looking for those early stage companies, whether they've got their first round, their pre-seed or their pre-pre-seed, as potential companies that they would want to, you know, grab onto for future benefit. And they know that, because the companies say it to me. It's not like The Guardian is going to cover me getting, you know, 250K if it's a British company, for example. But it gets back to that issue that you're like, how do you gather the news and how do you make sense of it, even from a data-driven approach? And I mentioned the example I had a couple of years ago where there was a fake VC company and who were doing fake funding announcements, and it all siphoned back to a guy in India. basically, they were the hedge fund, telling everyone he was a head, had invested in SpaceX and Tesla and a bunch of those companies, and none of his companies actually existed. His website was basically just photo stock and people that didn't exist, and nor did any of the companies that they supposedly funded. But my point is that those companies actually were being syndicated by news outlets. So the ones that just take announcements, they don't do any journalism on them. They just, so your MSN, the sites that aggregate funding, so Crunchbase, Traxon, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't until APR contacted me about it that we got onto the story and we're like, well, this is actually a bigger thing. And so I think this is where it comes back to this effect about do you trust ChatGPT or et cetera, do the readers care? Well, you know, if you're hearing that there's this company, you know, investing in these, you know, let's sake of argument, direct air capture, and you're a direct air capture company, you might reach out and you might get scammed. And I broke that story, I had several investors contact me off the record and say they had been scammed. So, I mean, this is where it's not always as simple as it sounds. And
self-referencing links is a whole other problem, and I've spoken to you about from
there's also a trend at the moment, particularly in the British news, where there are fake experts. So people circulating who are literally saying they're a psychologist, for example, and they're offering commentary to a bunch of publications on an issue like, I don't know, it's not really my thing, but let's just say divorce, sake of argument. So they're, and when people, when journalists, particularly the Press Gazette, have looked them up, they don't exist. So these things are, and this is becoming more of an issue, particularly when people are looking for credible news, because, okay, sure, news is all subjective. But when you get to this point where you're talking about fake companies, you're talking about fake experts, you're talking about fake investors, all of it now is made so much easier by generative AI. You can, you know, there are all, you know, you even have in Australia where you had fake video DJs doing music shows that were avatars, you know, and people thought they were real journalists, like human journalists. So,
yeah, I mean, that kind of thing is, well, that's a whole, I think that's a big topic we could go into even further. So maybe just to round off this, I feel like there was two things I was going to say, but I lost one of them in your response there. Yeah. I think there's a combination of reasons as to why we're seeing a lot of defunding at the moment. Yeah. Search changed. Opinions, op-eds kind of got diluted by YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, et cetera, influencers, which I say it's good or a bad thing, but it has just changed other scenes. People maybe prefer to watch videos than read. Yeah? And I think AI results, shall we say, have had some impact. Not on everything, but definitely enough to be problematic. And we remain to be seen whether the audience that wants to go and see what you or an outlet has to say about something or wants more serendipity around what is hot or not or what is news or what is happening in the world than just tell me the best toasters, remains to be seen if that's a big enough audience, I guess, for quote-unquote traditional online media. But, yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe those all add up to the reasons why we're seeing this at the moment. But.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also just like if you look at like someone like Business Insider, when they said we're going to cut numbers, they were saying the only way forward is a digital AI-first approach for media, which is something that, you know, it's almost like every time people are laying people off, the excuse is always AI rather than maybe it's business practices.
The excuse is always insert latest technology here, and it still remains to be seen whether
are they laying off journalists? Are they laying off other people in the companies? Are they laying off, you know, marketing staff? I don't know. Seems to be always sales and marketing that seem to go first in a lot of companies. But my point is that
weird.
Firstly, let's just say a couple of things. One is that journalists using AI is not new. Journalists have been using AI for decades. Everything from stock market reporting to sports reporting, so scoring and things like that. particularly companies like MSN and Yahoo, Wall Street, Washington Post. These are not new things. People have been using them for decades. And then it's evolved to individual tools by individual journalists, your transcribers and all that sort of thing, recording software, blah, 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 image manipulation, etc. But I think the thing that kind of the reckoning will be, and I think we've both alluded to this, about is ultimately what is the priority for the reader? Because I think that the thing I'm hearing most from people is what the one thing that will make tech media survive is the relationship between the readers and the publication or the journalists, that authenticity, perhaps, if I can use that term.
Let's save this for the next section, because I think we're slipping into kind of, well, it's not really the future, but it's not the past, shall we say. I don't know. This is some very arbitrary divisions. But let's maybe wrap up this, take a very quick break for a sponsor, and we'll be back shortly. So one thing in this world is at the moment is trying to maintain focus. So I would like to talk about a productivity tool that I've been a huge fan of for a long time, and that is called Raycast on macOS, iOS, and soon Windows. It does all sorts of things. But actually, the feature I've been playing around with a lot recently is its focus feature. I love focus modes on macOS, but they only go so far. They block off certain applications, and one of the most distracting applications in the world is the internet browser. It lets you go deeper, so block certain websites, block some applications, this kind of thing. It actually, and it ties in the Raycast focus and the macOS focus modes tie in really well, and I'm actually going to probably make a little video about that soon, because I suddenly realized how powerful that could be in helping me achieve my goals as opposed to looking at cat pictures. So if you're interested in finding out more about Raycast yourself, then head to go.kristenchiller.com/Raycast. You get a discount on their pro plan and, of course, throw a few cents our way.
All right. So I guess to top off some of what I was saying, probably from the last section, I think the issues that the way forward, perhaps, that I think a lot of things is around authenticity, about personalization, about relevance, thinking about, the relationship between readers and journalists and publications, or dare I say brands in some instances. I think these things will matter. And I also think, of course, there is also scope for a broader, and there already is, of course, definition of what media and journalism means. Whether that's podcasting or it's Substack newsletters, it's, I don't know, Reels and TikToks and all these sorts of things, because I think different mediums serve different audiences, and particularly different niches or different news categories. So a VC isn't, well, and I've thought about it, but in my knowledge, and correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, a VC is not necessarily going to TikTok to look for startup news.
I don't know.
Maybe that will change. I mean, maybe that is changing. Maybe that will change. I don't know. But it shows, I think, people, that want to access media. I think, firstly, I think the terms I see most often used perhaps to demarcate is earned media and paid media. So is it something where the brands and the companies that want to get news in the news are facing a lot more pressure now to be featured simply due to the smaller number of publications?
Yeah. So I would like to come to that, actually, because this is something that we've both been thinking about. We've noticed that PR/press events at events have changed recently, in that they have become smaller, but not necessarily worse. Smaller sometimes makes it sound like that's a bad thing. But instead of just like, oh, here's a big room, there's some canapes and some cheap wine, here's some journalists in the room, off you go. That seems to have lessened somewhat, apart from a couple of events that are very big events. And now we've noticed that there's been a lot more like, we're having a dinner with 10 people and we're going to talk about one particular topic with one, two, three companies.
Well, fireside chat type stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if this is a sign that there's less people to invite, or
I don't think that's the issue.
a change in the way they just want to do things? I don't know. Or is it just pure coincidence?
Well, I mean, we went to three in, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. So, you know, I think it's also just a different approach. I mean, I think it's people are recognizing that as well, because journalists, as I've said, in if I look explicitly at digital tech media, as in websites with articles, as opposed to other forms that in this sense, there is fewer journalists. So the journalist's time is a lot more limited, and it's harder, perhaps harder, to get their attention. So I think that is one of the strategies.
Well, that's actually a point, because we've so far talked about, we have talked about media, we've talked about readers, we've talked a little bit about what media writes about, but we haven't spoken so much about those people in between. Won't someone think of the poor PRs? and by virtue, the companies they represent, because it feels like for a long time the balance was just about right, or there was more journalists to PRs, and there's always more companies that they represented. But it sort of feels like now there's increasingly more PRs than journalists.
Well, there always has been. That's not a new thing. I mean, there's always been more. No? I think there's now, I think it's like 15 to 1, something like that. That's always been the case.
I also wonder, because I find that traditionally they don't really reach out to the one-person outlets as much, unless you're huge.
Correct.
Like, I'm sure Mr. Beast gets inundated with there is a
hierarchy
time,
of tier one, tier two, tier three, et cetera. And that, I think that's probably shifting as there is less of it. The tier ones are being redistributed, or their reach has been reduced, or their team's numbers have been reduced, things like that. Yeah, and I think it's also looking at, I think one of the issues that interests me about this is for PRs, part of their pressure is ROI. How do you measure impact? And, you know, no publication is going to tell a PR, well, the article got this number of reads, because that's not how we do things. That's company secrets, I guess, in that sense. And also it's just, You could honestly use
it doesn't mean much.
You could
either,
use 10 different measurement tools, and then also use something different. So it's extremely hard for even us to measure that. The only way you could measure it is if you had customers explicitly saying, or investors saying, I saw this, I did this.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I have had a number of, over the years, I've had more than a small number of companies tell me that someone reached out because they saw the interview. Yeah. A lot of these have told me that. And likewise with, you know, people have got customers that way. So it does work. Yeah. Depends on what you do, obviously, and all the other stuff that comes into it. And
to be fair, this is why we have like the ad reads in this show. Yeah. All those links I'm giving to you have affiliate codes.
Exactly.
And this is not a new thing. But I will fully admit that sometimes when I hear ads on a podcast or something, I hear the product, and sometimes I just remember the product. I don't always remember to follow that link.
Yeah, but that's
so sometimes that connection is
quite what I meant. I meant more when.
No, I know. But also, any good website will have put referral code on any link in any article. So if someone clicks on just a generic website that you've mentioned, in theory, if things are done properly, that person should know they came from you, that kind of thing as well. But a lot of it is word of mouth. That's precisely my point. I used to do developer relations work, and that was always a very hard one to measure, because people would say, well, I saw you do a talk, and 6 months later we became a customer. But it was only indirectly because of that talk. You know, at a talk, you can't – it's very hard to track impact of these things sometimes, because people don't always follow these paths that you want them to. They just read this article by Kate Lawrence, and 2 months later think, oh, yeah, that cool company. I should look into them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, true. And you know, I'm certainly not using me as the only example for that. There would be many more. But my point is, I guess one thing I think about with this is, so is it – how do you differentiate that kind of reach with someone who perhaps is in a newsletter? So the company is mentioned in a newsletter. I mean, I know I've been mentioned in newsletters where they've linked to my pieces, and I don't know how to track that, you know, in a way that's reliable. But even so, for the company, say it's a startup for sake of argument, the PR, like, I guess my, okay, maybe I'm not phrasing myself very well. My question is around discoverability. So when I think about a newsletter, I think, and we've both got our own newsletters, I think about a captive audience. It's invariably a bit of a bubble. It's, you know, the same people in a general sense. And then you've got mine is ostensibly a free newsletter. It always will be. Some people have paid, of course. But you're going to have, I always think about a newsletter. You subscribe because you support what they're doing. But inherently, you're making something of an echo chamber. Because you're going to have people that you want to read about because you like them or you support them, whatever. And that's very different than doing a search on a topic. Like if I'm looking at, you know, what is the state of, I don't know, green hydrogen module receptacles. And that goes to a TechEU article I've written about, you know, a company doing something interesting to transport green hydrogen. You know, as opposed to going to a newsletter for a business audience or something like that, but you can see the things. Like, so that becomes a broader issue about search and about discoverability. And I'm not suggesting I have all, this is not a fully formed thought by any means, but I think it is something I do think about because it's like, how do we find things out? How do we search?
Yeah.
And I know, for example, as a journalist, because I do get asked this a lot by young VCs, like, you know, juniors, they say to me, well, how do you find companies? And I say to them, often it's just looking up particular things. Are people working on certain issues? I'm going to events. I'm going to incubate. I'm looking up incubators and accelerator programs, all that sort of thing. That sort of outward search. It's not like an inbound, like a newsletter or something like that, you know? And we're only one little percentage because obviously we have a certain type of media, which is a certain audience. And you know, even with us, you know, our whole audiences are not just devs and VCs and startups and stuff. It's also people in the broader ecosystems. You know, it's politicians and it's policymakers and all these sort of, you know, bodies, and there's many of them, you know, some anonymous and all this sort of stuff. And so I always think about, well, when we talk about this, like information, the way we get information is increasingly siloed now, and that's going to become more of a trend.
Yeah. So this is perfect because it's kind of what I wanted to say next. So we this is kind of not really the future. This is more like the present future.
Yeah, I'll say
that. You mentioned earlier that these new outlets had opened, and invariably what happens when a larger outlet closes down at the moment, a few people go off and do something else, but then a lot of people kind of filter into more smaller outlets. So I think in some respects the future is more smaller outlets, be that one person, two persons. And some of my favorite outlets, they're very Mac-focused, like Mac Stories or Six Colors. These are generally just two people with a few people brought in, and they seem to do reasonably well. In TechEU is also only a handful of people. So this seems to be what happens. Generally, it's not even actually just unique to media at the moment. It seems to be the general trend at the moment is we get more and more smaller splinters of companies, which is not bad in its way. And in fact, in some respects, it's going back to what things used to be. Pre-industrialization, this is what cities were. They were hundreds, thousands of small 1, 2, 3, 10-person shops. But the difference we come to now is if everybody has their newsletter, if everybody has their podcast, how do all of these people get read, seen, heard?
Yeah, because that's kind all of
their
my
readers
point.
Only have a finite amount of time. And how do they all get funded?
Yeah.
You know, you could buy a news. I don't know how much a newspaper is these days, or a monthly subscription to The Guardian. I don't know how much is a monthly subscription to The Guardian.
I don't know. I don't have one. I have a subscription to The New York Times, which I think is something like a couple of euros a month at most.
And do you get ads as well?
No.
No. It's okay. So it's a few euros. I mean, that doesn't feel very sustainable to me.
Well, it's a big publication.
Even let's take a couple of euros. So let's say, you know, because they get more people, those couple of euros are times 100,000. So, but one person needs 1,000. But are there 1,000 people to pay that to everybody? You know what I mean? Like, it just gets harder and harder. And especially as your fallback is always advertising, which I think we've already established is kind of dying in that sense anyway, you know, the kind of the especially online media. So all these individuals with their opinions and et cetera, is great and fantastic. But how can they make a living from what they do without being beholden to platforms,
yeah,
be that advertising,
exactly,
be that TikTok, be that YouTube? Like, I will personally say my YouTube channel was going really well, nice trend of everything until about 6 months ago. And ever since, it has died so much to a point I'm not sure if I can even be bothered anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't know why exactly.
Well, this is the whole
and
thing,
that's
right?
That's what I mean. Like, if you're beholden, yeah, to a platform, you always have the risk of suddenly making no income and you don't always know why. So are there other ways that you can think of in the future that just could be filled?
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost like you're at the whim of a big tech platform. A big tech, oh,
everything.
If I can say media platform, for want of a better term. But I know,
we're fast becoming, fast careening into the dystopian future we saw in the
past. Yeah, and I mean, it comes back to, like, I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks about, well, is the responsible, who is responsible to pay for news or media in it? You know, is it governments? Is it companies like big tech that gets the benefits? Mm. Is it people that get coverage? Is it readers? Is it someone else? Like, I don't know. I'm certainly not pushing any particular view because I am not a media analyst in that sense. I'm a journalist who writes about tech. Mm. I don't have a media degree in that way. But I do think it comes back to, there'll probably be a piecemeal approach where people will have to just, I think there'll be, firstly, the one thing I've been thinking about is, you know, Substack is one example. Substack just got a big ass amount of funding this week. Was it this week? They got a big funding.
I mean, that in itself says something. If they rely on funding still, it shows they're not necessarily making enough themselves.
So do all the media publications. They also rely on funding. Like, you know, everyone relies on funding. So, but yeah, Substack is a big platform. I mean, Medium likewise would probably be in the same category in that sense.
Medium is quite different. And I sort of, much as I actually kind of support it because you subscribe to one thing, not dozens of things like Substack, I also kind of feel like traffic through Medium is also declining. So I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of this could just be
Medium.
But
I mean, Medium has been around since what is it, 2012 while, or something like that? Like a good chunk of time. And I think it's really flipped, struggling to find its spot. It's had investors, it's had, you know, employees, it's had people that earned income from it, some very large amounts, most people nominal. And then, you know, it's had a bunch of different restructures. Mm-hmm. It's obviously done constant membership drives and also just trying to be nimble and agile and all that sort of stuff. I think it moved. I think it moved out of, you know, the San Francisco desk office to probably something remote or asynchronous or what have you. So it's had to be as, you know, agile as any media company. And I think they probably would admit that themselves, that, you know, but and these are all hard decisions because it's not like everyone has, there's a solution where everyone can say, oh, well, look, all the media companies need to do X. Everyone will be fine because we know that, you know, every year, and none of this is anything to do with even tech media, you can look up data and see how many journalists lose their job every year in newsrooms across the West, for example, the Western world, UK, Australia, US, et cetera, Canada, I'm just purely saying English speaking as one example.
Yeah.
You know.
So let's talk about the whole AI thing. Let's assume it sticks around. And it seems that a lot of people quite like using these interfaces for finding answers to things. How can the people who create the inputs into these tools make something out of this?
What,
any ideas?
What do you mean?
Okay, so let's go back to my repeater example. So that content came from somewhere, probably from some of those websites. So how can the writers of that content that fed that machine, when it gives out an answer that was reliant on those answers, and moving forward, if they're not there, then that's a whole other thing in itself. But, you know, how if these AI chat tools are the new way people find things, how can the people who feed those with their hard work make something.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I think that would have to be a separate story more than a soundbite in, because there is a whole lot of people working on this right now, creating tools to do this for newsrooms and writers and stuff like that. And maybe that will be something where we can try some of those out. But, I mean, in general, I think that what seems to stick is compelling content that is...
No, but Kate, those results I just tried in ChatGPT, it doesn't matter how compelling my content was or blah, 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 blah. I had no idea that any of my content formed those answers. So what does it matter?
What do you mean?
Nothing. So say Joe Smith wrote some compelling content about the best repeater for an office space. Mm. ChatGPT didn't tell me that. So it doesn't really matter.
I thought you were saying you had sources.
That was with the search one, not with the traditional way you use
it. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. No one knows where that compelling content came from.
But it's got links.
No. That's with its search option. The normal ChatGPT interface does not give you any references.
Okay.
So how does anyone know where that my compelling content went into that answer?
But maybe it should. Is that the issue?
Yes, I think this will be the case. I mean, obviously in other jurisdictions more than others, I think this may become the way it's done.
But then then you could take it a step further and say, well, you know, the writers and journalists like the New York Times who've had their work trained to feed these models should get remunerated because their phrasing, their examples, their speech patterns have, their terminology has all become this commodity which everyone will be replicating. And I'm not trying to say you own your own words, but you do in a sense, right?
No. Your voice, perhaps. We have to wrap up because we're running a little bit short on time. And maybe we should talk about this another time because
I think this is a bigger topic we need to get a few people to talk about.
I think we just spoke longer on other things than maybe we expected. But there's actually two things around that. One is that a lot of outlets are starting to do licensing agreements, which I don't know how much that helps the journalists. I'm not sure.
I would suspect that helps the publications more than the journalists.
Yes, probably.
And I think most journalists would say that.
But it also doesn't help people like you in a small team or people like me in a one-person team. I have no access to licensing agreements with OpenAI. They couldn't give two craps about how I feel about my content. But there have been examples recently, and this is interesting because it's not regulation. Cloudflare.
Yes, I saw that.
I think. Have put this thing up because Cloudflare basically sits in front of many, many websites of saying that, well, we're going to give you a way of saying it's okay for these tools to scrape my content and they'll remunerate you on that. Now, it's yet to be seen what this will mean. Is it pennies? Is it is it significant? Who knows? But it's an interesting idea, and I think this will start to be what happens through regulation, through other industries saying that, hey, you're taking advantage of us too, like companies like Cloudflare, because they get nothing from AI either.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Apart from a lot of traffic, which they have to cope with, which is a whole other conversation.
There's a whole lot of people getting nothing. Yeah.
Exactly. And this is a very big conversation. Mm. But I think I've always had this belief, and maybe I should put a bet on this, because this has been something I've been thinking of for a very long time, since the days of illegal file sharing. Where I kind of thought everything should be free and there's some kind of like global, this is very pie in the sky thinking, some kind of global agreement that says as part of your ISP fees, there's just little divs of money that go out to all the stuff that people consume and look at. And maybe in a kind of diluted way, this is what we're going to end up with some of these AI-based tools, in that I get a result. And they have to keep tracks on, well, this was based on this piece of information, this was based on this piece of information, this person pays $20 a month for ChatGPT Pro, percentage of that goes out to all of those. Whether that means it will actually sustain creators, who knows? But this may be the way it goes. I don't know. Anyway, I think we're going to have to wrap up.
I think
we could have gone on longer.
Yeah, I'd say to the listeners, I mean, we've probably touched on a lot of topics and...
Yeah.
I think that we can certainly, you know, pull these apart a bit more and probably spin out a few more episodes on some of these. The example of, you know, search optimization for within generative AI tools is one example. I do know a number of people working on that, that we could probably get to come on the show and give us
examples. Let's do it. So, Kate, we need proof of humanity. How can people see you and meet you in the next few months?
I don't know. I'm going on holidays in a few weeks for a week. So not then.
Don't tell me where you're
going. Do not contact me. I'll be on holidays.
How can they find you?
LinkedIn is probably your easiest bet. Blue Sky, etc. My name is Kate with a C and Kate Lawrence. Lawrence with a W as opposed to a U or something like that. Yep. And Chris, how can people contact you?
ChrisTigella.com. I've been taking a little bit of a YouTube break whilst I figure out, based on what I just said, and that I feel like a lot of the effort I'm putting in is not resulting in very much recently. So I'm rethinking maybe what I'm going to do around that. I've also started some new work recently, so that's been occupying my time a little bit. But I do have some new things coming out quite soon, actually, some things I've been working on, different things from pure writing. So keep an eye on ChrisTigella.com, which has also had a big, medium overhaul. If you want to learn something new, head on over to go.christianchiller.com/Manning for 40% off any book or course. We've got to get our sense, Kate. If you want to increase your productivity on Mac OS or iOS, head to go.christianchiller.com/Raycast. Sign us off, Kate.
I wish everyone a very nice time of day and we will see you very soon and prepare for a little bit more, maybe a few more answers and maybe a little less questions. If that makes sense, because we've done a lot of speculation.
Journalism's all about questions.
And we're all dying and not succeeding because it's not the case. And you know, I have lots of good examples of people succeeding, but you know, we have a short show. So next time.
We're not an American show. We're a European show. We don't go on for 3 hours. We go on for, my God, it's been an hour. That's probably the longest show I've ever done. All right.
Yeah. So yeah, have a very nice rest of the day. Or the evening, or the morning, or what have you.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to ChristianSchiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at ChristianSchiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me and you're most welcome next time.